Walter Cronkite's recollections about the day President Kennedy was killed continue. It is 2 hours after the shooting. In Dallas, aircraft 26,000 is about to become Air Force One and take off for Washington, just as the plane of Secretary of State Rusk and other cabinet officers was nearing Honolulu.
This is Andrews. That is a firm. 26,000 about getting ready to take off. He's on 1-3.
In the guarded protocols of the military, Air Force One became Air Force One only when the president stepped on board. Because there was no president for the moment, it was simply 26,000.
26,000 Andrews are coming up.
26,000, check, please.
26,000 Andrews, loud and clear.
As 972 approached Honolulu, the presidential plane in Dallas was preparing for takeoff. It was 3:30 Eastern Time. The casket of the dead president lay in the rear of the plane. A search was on for the text of the oath and a judge to administer it. Secret Service agent Roy Kellerman in Dallas briefed the chief of the White House detail in Washington, Jerry Benn. You'll hear two code names. Volunteer refers to the vice president. Lace to Mrs. Kennedy.
Do you have any idea yet what Lace wants to do and what Volunteer wants to do on their arrival here?
No, I will call you back. Suggest we have a 2:15 flight in the Andrews.
All right, let me know what Volunteer wants to do when they land, if they want to come in to Crown by helicopter.
Roger, I'll call you again.
Okay.
Such conversations were beyond our reach in New York. We still, quite oddly it seems to me,
on this news desk have had no word from Dallas at all as to the location of Mr. Johnson, nor as to whether or not he has indeed taken the oath of office. It is assumed that he would have from a Dallas judge, a federal judge perhaps. We now learn that Vice President Johnson is expected to be sworn in as president aboard an airliner before flying back to the nation's capital.
I do solemnly swear.
Johnson took the oath in the privacy of the stateroom at 3:38 Eastern Time. 26,000 now became Air Force One, Angel in the code book of Secret Service aliases. It would be 90 minutes before we would receive word of his improvised inauguration. We just got the word that Lyndon B. Johnson
has been sworn in as the President of the United States. He was sworn in at 1:38 Central Standard Time. That was 2:38, and that's almost an hour and a half ago now, if this time is correct here. The oath was administered to him by U.S. District Judge Sarah T. Hughes.
Judge Hughes, three decades before her role in the assassination drama, had been the first woman appointed to the Texas court system. Her nomination by Governor Allred caused a mighty fight in the Texas Senate, a debate that I, as a young cub reporter, had helped cover.
Roger, Roger, Air Force One, are you airborne at present?
Affirmative, airborne at 2047.
10 minutes later, the plane was in the air. A strong tailwind pushed the airspeed close to Mach 1 as it flew east into the night. Aircraft 972 out of Honolulu followed 6 hours behind. Meanwhile, government was being improvised in the air. Arrangements had to be coordinated with Crown, code name for the executive mansion, for the arrival at Andrews. A call went out to Army Surgeon General Leonard Heaton.
General Heaton is at Walter Reed Hospital. You'll have to stand by just a moment, or else let me call you back when I get him on the line. It'll take about a minute to reach him.
Crown, Roger. Try to get General Heaton, and in the meantime, try to get the Deputy Surgeon General. We will talk to either one. This is very important.
Roger, I'll put an emergency on it. We'll get him as soon as possible.
This is Dr. Berkeley. I want to get in touch with General Heaton or General Heaton's deputy.
Dr. Berkeley, this is Crown. We're working as fast as possible trying to get the call through for you. He is at Walter Reed. We're unable to locate. We're still searching. Over.
The most urgent matter was removing the casket from the plane and transporting it to Bethesda Naval Hospital. Air Force One reached Jerry Benn, code name Duplex.
Duplex is on the line. Go ahead. Duplex, this is Duplex.
arrangements have been made for a helicopter for the Bethesda Naval Medical Center. Over.
Duplex is on, this is Dr. Berkeley. What arrangements have been made regarding the reception of the President?
Everyone aboard Air Force One, with the exception of the body, will be choppered into the south ground. The body will be choppered to the Naval Medical Center at Bethesda. Over.
The body is in a casket, you know, and it will have to be taken by ambulance and not by chopper.
All right, I'll tell Captain Shepard that.
As Air Force One approached Washington, other small but necessary decisions were made. Major General Chester Clifton, codenamed Watchman, spoke to General Heaton.
This is General Clifton. We do not want a helicopter for Bethesda Medical Center. We do want a ambulance and a ground return from Andrews to Walter Reed. And we want the regular post-mortem that has to be done by law under guard performed at Walter Reed. Is that clear? Over.
That is clear, General Clifton.
Watchman then contacted Duplex with further specifications.
Duplex, this is Watchman. Over.
Go ahead, Watchman. This is Duplex. Over.
Now, some other instructions. Listen carefully. We needed a ramp. A normal ramp was up at the front of the aircraft on the right-hand side, just behind the pilot's cabin in the galley. We are going to take the First Lady off by that route. Over. Do you understand?
I receive affirmative.
Americans watched Air Force One touch down at Andrews at 5:58 in the afternoon.
The ramp is now moving up close to the back door of the presidential plane. And now we can see what we believe to be a coffin containing the body of President Kennedy being moved from Air Force One onto a special enclosed ramp, a mobile ramp, which was drawn up to the back door. Yes, we can make out the casket now.
For the first time, things seemed to be moving according to plan. The new president was in Washington. The rest of the cabinet would be in the Capitol by midnight. The government was in place. But for the next 3 days, Americans would share a mass of sounds and images that would remain with them for the rest of their lives. Today, they still seem as real as they did on that weekend 4 decades ago. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite.
Our story was produced by John McDonough with engineers Robert Newhouse and Charles Thompson. The full audio of the ground-to-air communications with Air Force One and Kennedy's cabinet is at our website, npr.org.